So just continuing on here, Dan, I wanted to transition actually to, you know, there's been so much talk about the border issue. And right. I think because of what's going on in the presidential race and everything, you know, you're the guy to talk about the border with, you know, what you wrote in Day of the Dead. And I think there's been this whole idea that the border issue is strictly about, you know, Mexican people coming to America searching for a better life. And the whole national security issue that you talk about has been entirely ignored by the mainstream media.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I'm just wondering what your feelings are on this election, because unfortunately it actually seems, you know, with all the criticism of him and, you know, of which there is many, Donald Trump seems to be the only one actually talking very seriously about this issue. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people who, you know, aren't on board with a lot of other things he's talking about.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate because he is the only guy who's pointing out that it's not a question of being afraid of Julio, you know, who's coming across to buy a leaf blower and get a, you know, job, you know, gardening someplace. The problem is you have a border which is a border in name only, that anyone can cross anywhere they want to cross it, whenever they want to cross it. And you've just had a national security assessment by the director of national security, Clapper, who said ISIS is going to attack the United States within the next year. And he was very pedantic about saying, I'm not talking about a San Bernardino or Charlie Hebdo type of inspired by attack. I'm saying ISIS is going to marshal forces. It is the highest thing on their priority list. They will attack the United States within the next year. Now, I'm sitting here saying, okay, during 2014 in the Hamas-Israel war in the summer of 2014, we know that ISIS had, and I say we, I mean the Israeli army, so does the American army know, that ISIS had a presence in Gaza. They were not fighting. They weren't engaged in any combat against Israelis. They were there as observers. What were they observing? They weren't observing how a Qassam rocket is fired. Nobody gives a shit. They weren't observing how Israelis maneuver in a built-up area. They know how Israelis maneuver in a built-up area. No one's, you know, reinvented the wheel on that one. They were observing how effective these terrorist tunnel attacks were and what measures Israel took to deal with them and how those things could be transposed into the challenges that ISIS faces. Now, the biggest challenge that ISIS faces is how do we do a real mass casualty attack against the United States? I do not believe it's going to be anything to do with aviation, because even though TSA is a charade and it's theater, it's still theater that's sometimes effective. So why take the chance on that?
Yeah.
Plus, what we've seen ISIS do time and again is their doctrine is, whether you see what they did in Mosul, whether you see what they did in Sinai, even to an extent in Paris, if they have the ability to set off truck bombs, they will set off truck bombs. That means that you'll have first responders going to the area where that truck bomb is, and they will either set up ambushes to take out first responders as they're on the way to where the truck bomb went off, or they'll attack in the opposite side of town. So all your first responders went to where the truck bombs were. They're going to hit the next part of town. And what they do is light infantry, guys with machine guns, RPGs, grenades, and handcuffs, because they intend to take hostages. So if I sit there saying, well, if I'm trying to imagine myself as an ISIS commander, and I say I want to carry out a mass casualty attack, and their mass casualty attacks always have to have a number of messages. I mean, and they're very, as I say, they're very pedantic about what their doctrine is. Their doctrine is to use terror not haphazardly, but as a weapon to strike fear into the heart of the populace, to make a statement that whatever your military is, it's powerless to stop you to stop us, ISIS, from attacking you. Your military is worthless. And number three, we can operate at will against you. And those are the three messages of terror that they always try to imbue their attacks with. So if I'm an ISIS commander, I'm sitting there saying, okay, what's a target that is accessible and easy for me to, because I don't have, like in Paris, I don't have Belgium nearby to be my jumping off point to attack in Paris. If I look at it, I go, the friendliest place that I have from which to launch an attack is Mexico. There's just no question about it. It's not Canada, it's Mexico. I have deals that can be cut between me and the cartels. Certain cartels I may have direct contact with, but the ones that I don't have direct contact with, Hezbollah does. Hezbollah has penetrated all of the cartels, including the Sinaloa cartel, and does business with them all day and all night long. They supply them with dope, they launder money for them, they supply them with weapons. They have an excellent relationship. And anybody who says, oh, but Dan, Hezbollah is Shia, and ISIS is Sunni, and therefore they will never cooperate, doesn't know jack shit about how the Middle East works, because they may kill each other in the Middle East, but if the object is to attack the great Satan, the United States, they will pack each other a lunch, not just cooperate. We now know that Iran aided al-Qaeda in 9/11, one Shia and one Sunni. As long as it was against the great Satan, those differences are forgotten. So they have access to the cartels. The cartels have existing drug smuggling tunnels. They've seen the effectiveness of them along the Gaza Strip. It's no longer theoretical. There was a dress rehearsal for this in Gaza, and that's really what I wrote the book about. And anybody who's interested in this should get a copy of the book, Day of the Dead, Book 1. Book 2 will be out in about 6 weeks, which deals specifically with San Diego and Tijuana.
I was going to ask you about that, because it's been – the Book 1 came out in what, May, I believe?
Yeah. And book 2 is going to be out in 4 to 6 weeks.
That's awesome. I think a lot of the audience checked out book 1, so they'll be looking forward to seeing book 2. I was going to ask you, you're talking about how imminent an attack at the border is. What about the threat of a cyber attack? Do you think that might be coming as well, or do you think that might be even more dangerous? Because Jack Murphy, the other host on this show, has talked a lot about that. A cyber attack could be way more deadly than something like 9/11, where you could wipe out bank accounts and really screw up the entire economy of the country.
Well, we know there's a cyber division of ISIS, where they have young guys who are Western educated and they're very computer savvy. We've seen, for instance, attacks on Turkey's banking system, which was ISIS, and I think that happened last month. They certainly have the capabilities. I wouldn't doubt that they would do it. But I suspect that even if they do a cyber attack, what they look for is pictures. And cyber doesn't give you pictures. So if you can imagine 100 ISIS fighters popping up out of a tunnel in downtown San Diego, being transported in vans to wherever they're going to be, doing their stuff. If they get a dozen, not 100, a dozen civilian hostages and kill a few hundred people in the street, which is easy to do, take out, our Navy SEAL base in Coronado, which is easy to do because they're unarmed, take out, the shore patrol and some rent-a-cops, and you have the run of the place because you have this idiotic posture that no American military personnel can carry weapons on military installations inside the United States, which is nuts. This is why a fat psychiatrist could kill 13 people at Fort Hood.
Yeah,
you've got half the Pacific Fleet at anchor there. It's a very attractive target. Any place where there's a concert going on or a sporting event going on, you can wreak total havoc with. But imagine if they just took back a dozen hostages through the tunnels into Tijuana and beheaded them on YouTube. What would we do? This administration is not going to authorize an airstrike on Tijuana. I don't care what happens. It's not going to authorize an invasion of northern Mexico. I don't care what happens.
Yeah.
So they have a safe haven that they know they can operate from. There's no question that they can operate from it. And what stands between us and them doing what they want to do is then San Diego PD. And, you know, your listeners are pretty savvy. People who aren't in the military don't realize how long it takes to gear up a unit to go out and deal with something, even if you have the Marines standing by at Camp Pendleton. Under the best of all circumstances, if they're called upon to respond to a terrorist attack, it's going to be over and the enemy's going to be long gone before the first guy steps foot in the first Black Hawk. It's just, that's the way it goes. And San Diego PD, with all due respect, is no match for ISIS. It's just so there's a scary scenario there that no one is talking about. We've now lessened our surveillance on our southern border, and San Diego is just one town. I mean, I live in Arizona. I could come parading across the border straight into Tucson or Phoenix without missing a beat. And if I lived in El Paso, Texas, I wouldn't be breathing too easy either. There's a lot of places where they can go and wreak havoc.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, though, Dan, you know, as a guy with the experience that you have, you know, seeing the actual tunnels that Hamas has built in Israel and, you know, serving with the IDF, what is actually the solution that needs to be done? Because there's been plenty of guys on this show, you know, who are special ops guys that feel building a border wall is not going to work. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I think, I don't entirely. Building a border wall will be effective. We've had very good luck with what is good results with what's called the separation barrier in Israel, where we were facing in the second intifada two and three suicide bombing attacks in our cities a week, you know, on a slow week. And that separation barrier has brought it down to zero. Now you've got, you know, knifings going on, but that's still better than guys who are carrying out suicide bombing attacks. So yeah, a barrier can be effective. I know that Israel and the United States have joined, in its public knowledge, have joined forces in exploring a technology that will detect tunnels and allow you to know where they are, who's in them, when they're in them, and take action against them. And I believe the U.S. just put up $45 million, and Israel matched that amount to do a joint effort to try and develop something that will be for terrorist tunnel attacks what Iron Dome was to terrorist rocket attacks. Iron Dome was a joint effort of the United States and Israel, and the results have been spectacular. I mean, you've got an anti-missile system that takes out 90% of incoming rockets.
And I think it texts, you know, short-range ones. It shoots over the citizens of Israel, I believe, like a text if something's about to hit their area, right?
Oh, yeah. There's actually a phone app that you can get that everybody has there that will, you know, give you the warning of, you know, there's a rocket that just hit over here. One's just been launched. You've got 15 seconds to take cover. And people during that war were glued either to the TV or to that app because in certain places you have a minute to take cover. Certain places they're closer to the border. You've got, 7 seconds to take cover.
Yeah.
So people were glued to that app, but that was part of the Iron Dome system. And I can tell you that that system saved my life personally more than once. I know that Israel and the United States are exploring a technology to deal with the tunnels. I think there's a race between how quickly that technology can be put into place and how quickly ISIS decides to carry out an attack using tunnels. And I think, you know, it's got to be one of their top plans. You know, some smart young captain has probably been tasked with preparing a paper and you know, kicking it up the chain of command. And there's probably, you know, four or five different scenarios that they've got. And I guarantee you a terrorist tunnel attack is one of the top five.
You're a dual citizen of the U.S. and Israel, right, Dan?
Right.
Is there anyone for president that you're liking right now? I mean, we were just talking about Trump, but is there anyone that you are set to go out and vote for at this point?
You know, whoever our president is going to be tested by every adversary we have, and we've got a lot of them right now. You've got a resurgent Russia, which is annexed the Crimea and invaded Ukraine, and thanks to our beloved leader, has undone half a century of American diplomacy, where we had Russia basically out of the Middle East, and the United States being the main power broker in the Middle East. Now it's the exact reverse. The United States is out of the Middle East, and the main power broker, and everyone knows it, is Vladimir Putin. That's the guy you've got to do business with. So you've got an Iran Shia crescent that goes from the Indian Ocean to the Mediterranean under Russian patronage. So Russia's going to test us. The Chinese have been creating these artificial islands 550 miles off their coast and declaring that that's now their coastal waters and that's their airspace, and they've been militarizing those things. Despite assurances to John Kerry, who protested vigorously, I want you to know, the Chinese are going to test us. Lil Kim in North Korea is going to test us.
Yeah.
Iran certainly will test us, and ISIS, without a doubt, will test us. So I look at, you know, who is there on the Democrat side? Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is not going to inspire fear in any of our adversaries.
I would agree.
Hillary Clinton is going to inspire laughter. I mean, she's just incompetent. Forget anything else about, you agree with her ideology, you don't agree with her ideology, she's fucking incompetent.
Yeah.
And no one is going to be afraid of her.
This entire audience would agree with you on that one.
Yeah. And if I look at Marco Rubio, I see a very handsome young man who's very erudite. He seems to be about a mile wide and about 3 inches deep, and he looks like a boy. And he's going to tempt any adversary to test him to the limit. I like Cruz as far as his ideology. He's a conservative. He's a great debater. I think that's great in terms of filibustering, but you've got to have somebody who can marshal the country behind him, because we're going to be in tough times, and I don't think he's the guy. The one advantage that Trump has, and it is an advantage, and it's the same one that Reagan had. And I remember I had just come back from living in Israel when Reagan was running for office in 1980. And everyone said, oh, he's an idiot. He's senile. He's an actor. He's a puppet. And the corporate things are pulling his strings. But he had one quality that was of major importance. People, our adversaries, looked at him and said, you know what? That crazy son of a bitch might just do what he says.
Yeah.
And that is not just an admirable quality in dangerous times, it's damn near a necessity. And I think, you know, Menachem Begin had the same thing about him. People looked at that little guy and went, you know, that crazy son of a bitch might just do what he says. I think that Trump could inspire the same fear in our adversaries. And I know there's a lot of things that one can say against Trump, and I've said a number of them. But the one quality he does have is, I believe, if he looked across the table at Putin or Lil Kim or Xi or ISIS or the Ayatollah, they would take pause and go, you know what? I don't know what that crazy son of a bitch is capable of. He might just do what he says. That's worth a lot.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And I've been pretty critical of the guy, too. I mean, there's been certain things he's said that I think have been very outlandish. But on the foreign policy end of things, he seems to be the one guy who's, you know, not beholden to not only special interest groups, but kind of the same people who have been running this same foreign policy we've had for decades, because there hasn't been that much of a difference between the past few presidents. I mean, if you look at the border, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and the border is an issue that you care about, they've done absolutely nothing to secure it.
Yep. Yep. It's very true. And he is the kind of guy who, I mean, I hate to, you know, make it a cliche, but he's not afraid to say you're fired, you know, even to civil servants. And he could do a house cleaning in the State Department. And by the way, in the Pentagon, that's long overdue. And he would be the kind of guy who I believe could rally a nation. And you've got to have that behind you. And who could, you know, when he talks about his ability to cut deals with the Democrats, an ideologue say, well, we've had enough of cutting deals. that may be true, except we're going into some pretty dangerous times, and we're going to need to rally a country behind us. It's not going to be, you know, Iraq. It's going to be us on our doorstep fighting. And I think he's the kind of guy who could inspire fear in our adversaries.
I would agree with that, with the cutting deals part, because I think that there are way too many Americans right now who have this idea, you know, if they're conservative, that the Democrats are our enemy. And at the end of the day, our enemy as a nation are groups that you talk about, like ISIS or even groups like Hamas. It's not the people at the other side of the political spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you a not unlikely scenario. Iran has unveiled a rocket that they have. It has a range of about 500 miles. What that means is they can set that rocket up on a hillside in Tijuana, put a timer on it, and hit downtown L.A. anytime they want. And what are we going to do? Are we going to invade northern Mexico? Who is the president who's going to be able to deal with that? And I don't see, quite frankly, anybody other than Trump, because he is a whack job, saying to the Mexican government, either you deal with it or we're coming down and dealing with it.
Yeah.
And that's not a far-fetched scenario. ISIS could, with impunity, operate from northern Mexico in places where the Mexican government is not in control, and they can hit targets in the United States anytime they want to. And why wouldn't they? What's to stop them?
Sure. I was going to ask you another military-related question, but off of this time.